1 Corinthians 13, we've been thinking about a few things, and we see that so much of this is about love. We've asked people in the church to send in photos and things over the summer, or kind of stories and things that relate to trust. And the rest of the week through the summer holidays are going to be looking around the theme of trusting in Jesus the King. This one we're picking up on some of the themes from Holiday Club. And oddly enough, though, someone sent me in a photo that related very nicely to this theme. In fact, someone sent me in this photo. And you might just about be able to read what's up there. I'd be a bit confused as to what it's about. So some members of the fellowship, I think the Morgan Dewars, and maybe some others with them, had been down in Cornwall on the beach. And as they were sat there on the beach, a plane flew past, towing a banner. Towing this banner, you can just about pick out if you've got good eyesight, which says on it, "Jesus loves every one of you." And they were sat there on the beach and saw this plane flying by. It's all about love. We've had Team Builders Holiday Club this week, as hopefully you've picked up by now if you've been awake through the first part of the service. And we've been thinking a lot about what it means to be on God's team. What it means to be part of God's team. We sometimes talk about being part of his family, but we put it very much in the sense of being part of a team. And what we see in 1 Corinthians as we read it is that a key part, if we're going to be on God's team, if we're going to be part of his team, then we need to have love. We need to love one another. And it's a bit of a strange thing, actually, to come to think about that when we've been thinking about teams and about sport all week. Because actually, thinking about love and sport don't often particularly go together. Unless we're talking about loving the game or loving the sport that you play, actually kind of love within sport doesn't, you know, you don't often talk about a footballer and say, you know, they just seem like such a loving person. Other than now, maybe the guy in the waistcoat. But other than that, you don't generally think about sports people and think, oh, they're just so loving, do you? It's not generally what you think about when it comes to sport. And you can see some of it, because sometimes love and sport don't feel quite like they fit together, especially the way love is described here. Because often in sport, we see a lot of pride, don't we? It says here, love is not proud. And yet, often in sport, we see people very proud of what they've done. Or it says that love does not envy. And often in sport, we see the other side of it too. If you haven't done it, then you're envious of those who have. Of those who have won, who have achieved. It says in verse 5 that love is not self-seeking. That love isn't just out for itself and what it wants, its own interests. It's almost as though winning isn't everything. As though you shouldn't just be out to win and for yourself and for what you want above everything else. And yet this is the kind of love that God is saying we should have if we're going to be part of his team. But of course there are some things actually that it talks about here. Although we don't often talk about love in sport much, there's some things it says here that we need a lot in teams. And some of the things we've been talking about in Team Builders this week. We talked about being big-headed, didn't we? And we just said about that earlier. And about Joseph being a bit big-headed. And we said that actually if you're going to be part of a team, you can't be big-headed. You can't go around boasting all the time. And it says here, love does not boast. If we're going to be on a team, we're going to play well. We can't boast. And love doesn't keep a record of wrongs, it says. You might remember if you were here during Team Builders, there was this little bit in the drama. Where was it? Dwayne? What was it? Dwayne who? Dwayne Mooney. In the drama. He refused to pass to, he was the star football player, and he refused to pass to one of the other players because he passed it to him before and he lost the ball and he wasn't very good. And it says here, love doesn't keep a record of wrongs. Because actually, if we did play in a team like that, as soon as someone made a mistake, we didn't play with them anymore, then we wouldn't be a team very long at all. It's often been said about the England football team in years before this World Cup that we've got some of the greatest players in the world, yet they don't seem to work as a team. They're just a group of individuals. And they don't work together, they don't gel together. They're just a bunch of individuals. And even though they've got the same goal, even though they all like to win, they don't do well, or they haven't done well before, because they failed to work as a team. And that's one of the things that seems to have been different in this World Cup. Love helps a team work together. It says earlier in the same letter that we heard read from earlier that love builds up. That when we love, we build up each other and make one another stronger. And actually, there's some quite difficult things in the start of this passage, because in the first few verses, it says actually what happens if you don't have love. It doesn't just describe what love is, but it says what happens if you don't love. It starts off by talking about kind of spiritual gifts, God-given abilities, the stuff that God's given you, that you can use the things that God's given you, but if you do it without love, then it's nothing. Think about this for a moment. You could be the best footballer. You could be one of the greatest footballers. You could be brilliant. But actually, it's saying here, if you haven't got love, you're just going to be showing off. You're just going to be boasting. You're just going to be out for yourself. And actually, you might find you achieve nothing. Think about the thing that you are best at. What do you think is your greatest skill? Your greatest ability? The talent that you've got? Not that you'd have to be better than anybody else, but you think, actually, I think this is the thing that I'm really great at. That this is something I can do really well. It says here, actually, if you do that without love, then it's nothing. That's what God's saying. If we do those things without love, it's nothing. And it goes on, it talks about faith that can move mountains, having a really strong belief in God, having a really deep trust in God, that actually trusting in God so much that you believe anything could happen. You might believe that something is going to happen really strongly. You might believe with all your heart that football is coming home. You might believe that it's really going to happen. You might have a really strong ambition, a really strong dream, a great thing that you want to do, whatever it might be. Maybe it's to get into a particular job or employment. Maybe it's to get married. Maybe it's to get a promotion at work. Maybe it's to have a good family life. Or maybe it's things in church. Maybe you've got an ambition, a dream to read the whole Bible or to get to know God more or to draw closer to Him or to preach a sermon or whatever it might be. Maybe you've got all sorts of dreams and ambitions. And it says here that even if you do those things, even if you achieve your greatest dreams and ambitions, if you do it without love, actually, it says, I am nothing. If we do those things, if we achieve those things without love, you are nothing, it says. It turns out it's nothing if you don't do it with love. And then it says something that's even harder for us, because it says, if I give all I possess to the poor, if I go and do things that look like they're loving, that look like they're kind, that look like they're generous, that look like they're nice, that other people might look at and see and think, oh, they look like a good person because they do these good things and they seem like they work really hard and they care for others and they do all these things that look like they love others. But it says, even if we do all those things, but we don't really love, it says we gain nothing. That it's useless, that it's not worth anything. It's trying to make it really clear to us that if we're going to be on God's team, if we're going to be part of His family, then it means we need to love. That we need to place loving each other and caring for each other as a highest priority. That love should be at the centre of what we do, personally and together as God's team. Jesus said the greatest commandments were to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind and with all your strength. With absolutely everything that you are, love God. And then he made it really simple. He said, the second is like it. Love your neighbour as yourself. He made it really simple for us. And it was quite easy for us, wasn't it? When we came and we said, what is love? Love is. We were a little bit slow at first because people don't always like putting up their hand in church and saying things. But when we started to get there, we started to have a few things, didn't we? We all kind of started to pick up. Some people knew what was already in 1 Corinthians. Some people have seen what love looks like. Some people have seen it in marriages, in family, in friends, in those around us. We've seen something of what love is like. It's easy for us to put the words on it, isn't it? And yet, doing it seems so much harder. Doing it can seem so much more difficult. Because the difficult thing about 1 Corinthians 13, that passage that we read, is that it wasn't all about feelings. It was all about things that we do. And it kind of becomes clear if you start putting your name in the picture. This is quite uncomfortable, actually, to type out. Andy is patient. Andy is kind. Andy does not envy. Andy does not boast. Andy is not proud. Andy does not dishonour others. Swap my name for yours and read it in your head. Does not dishonour others. Is not self-seeking. Is not easily angered. Keeps no record of wrongs. Does not delight in evil but rejoices with the truth. Always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And suddenly we see that actually this shows up that we're not always as loving as we think we are. That actually it shows up our weaknesses and our failures and our gaps personally and sometimes as God's team together that we mess up on this stuff and we get it wrong. And there's things maybe we've got to sort out and we've got to work on. And it is, in some ways, meant to show us that we don't always do it. Because actually, if we swap it round and we don't put our name in, that we put in someone else's, we find something of hope. Jesus is patient. Jesus is kind. Jesus does not envy. Jesus does not boast. Jesus is not proud. Jesus does not dishonor others. Jesus is not self-seeking. Jesus is not easily angered. Jesus keeps no record of wrongs. Jesus does not delight in evil but rejoices with the truth. Jesus always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. As we look at it, we're meant to see that actually these words don't describe us terribly well because we don't always love in that way. But these words do describe Jesus perfectly. Because Jesus is the only one who is perfectly loved. And actually, when we look at Jesus, we see what it is to love. Because as someone said earlier, God is love. Jesus is God himself and he shows us what love is. He showed us what love is. He showed us what love is so far that he was willing to die for us. He never failed to love and loved even to his death on the cross. And we see that actually God's love, Jesus' love, is like no other. Jesus died to show us that actually love isn't about what we do. Love isn't about what I've done and you've done, but actually ultimately love is about what God has done for us, based on nothing that we have done. That we can have that love, we can be confident and secure in, because it's nothing because of us, but only because of him. We had our son's Caleb's birthday party yesterday, and there's a thing about birthday parties that if you get invited to a birthday party, and even adults know this, if you get invited to a birthday party, then you have that kind of thing, don't you, that you need to get them a present. Right? Even adults feel this. Like, we certainly know it with children's parties. If you're children or you've been invited to a party, you know you've got to take a present along. Adults get it too. They don't have so many birthday parties, but you know, a big birthday comes along for an adult and they have a big party and they invite people along and they might say something on their invite like, your presence is present enough. Or yeah? or something twee like that. But then you still got that feeling of, well, you still feel like you need to get them something to celebrate their birthday with them and show that you love them. As part of that gift. And you might never normally get them anything, but this big birthday's come along, you've been invited to their party, and so you feel like you need to get them something. I want you to think for a moment about that person who you really don't get on with. Because we've probably all got someone a bit like that, at school maybe, in your class, you might be enjoying 6 weeks away from them at the moment. But you know, there's someone perhaps who you don't get on with so well. They just annoy you, and you're perhaps never really very nice to them. Maybe it's the person in the office or a neighbour or a club you go to. And there's just that person that you just wind each other up. And they're probably the last person that you'd invite to your birthday party. However big and however many people you're inviting, you probably really would never invite them. And I want you to imagine for a moment that it's your birthday. And you go to wherever it is, to school, to work, to that club, you see them. And they come up to you, and they've got a gift. And they come and they give you a big hug. And they say, I knew it was your birthday, and I just wanted to give you this. Because I know we don't always get on, and I know you've done a bunch of stuff to try and hurt me. But I still think you're great, and I still love you anyway. And I wanted to give you this. I don't know how you'd respond to that. Some of us, it might change our attitude to that person. Some of us might be so struggling with that person that we don't want to accept it. We think it's some kind of trick, that in some way they're doing this to spite us anyway, that you know they must be giving us mushrooms or something disgusting like that. But I just want to share that with you as something of a picture of what God's done for us. Because it wasn't like we invited him to our party. It wasn't like we were trying to be friends with him. The Bible says that while we were still his enemies, while we were still doing all sorts of things against him, while we were doing all sorts of things just to annoy him and wind him up, that he sent not just a little gift, not just a small present, not just a token, he sent his son, Jesus. He gave us something priceless, that Jesus would die for us. And that's how God's love is so, so different from ours. Because it didn't depend on anything that we did. We didn't invite him to the party. We didn't say, God, come and be on my team. God came to us and said, I'm willing to give everything so that you'll be on my team. And that's the invitation that Jesus offers. He gave everything to invite us to be on his team. And actually, the more we know him, the more we know just how much he's done for us, just how big that gift is, the more actually we'll see what love is really like. The more actually we will learn to love ourselves. Helen's going to lead us. I'm going to think a bit more about what that love means.